yeah. What's up, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to episode 67 of the Sailor Jerry podcast. My name is Matt Cothran. I am still your host. Today is Thursday, April 18th, 2024. And yes, ladies and gentlemen, after all these years, Sailor Jerry Spiced Rum is still made the old school way, 92 proof, bold and smooth as hell. I hope everybody out there is feeling great. I'm sending a huge shockwave of positivity out there into the universe, out there into the ears of everybody listening to the Sailor Jerry podcast around the world. It's Coachella time, okay? Coachella is lit, okay? I don't know if you're watching the live stream. Those who know me know I'm a big fan of the Coachella live stream. Such an easy festival to hate on. I'm not a hater, okay? You know, they're calling it the Influencer Olympics this year. They're saying nobody bought tickets. It looked plenty sold out to me. You know, lots of great music. Lana Del Rey was great. You know, it's still a little boring for me, but I thought she did great stepping up to the plate to headline. You know, the talk of the festival for me was No Doubt absolutely crushed it. I mean, they were amazing. Doja Cat was great. Tyler, the Creator was sick. You know, then you find different bands that, you know, maybe you didn't know you liked or had never heard of. You know, for me, that band was the Red Pairs. Red Pairs from El Monte, California. They have kind of a shoegazy punk strokes / garage rock. They're good, man. Check them out. Red Pairs. Ice Spice, okay? Everybody likes to hate on Ice Spice, and I get it. It's low-hanging fruit. You know, it might not have the most substance, but I think to me, one of the things that, as a musician, I find myself, the trap that I find myself falling into, especially as I get older, is that you take things so seriously. You know, you take your art so seriously, you take your career so seriously, that you forget, you know, that music is supposed to be fun. And that's what I love about Ice Spice. You know, she's fun and she doesn't give a fuck. You know, she doesn't need to be, you know, this multi-layered complex artist. You know, it's just straight up, you think you're the shit, you're not even the fart. I love that. Viva Ice Spice. Shout out to Coachella. No matter what people say, I love you. All right, it's time for episode 67. Josh Arment is not just an incredible tattooer. He is the owner and operator of the legendary Aloha Monkey Tattoo Shop in Burnsville, Minnesota. In this legacy-esque episode, Josh and I take a look back on the incredible history of the shop as it braces itself for a massive 25th anniversary party. Now, the shop was originally started by Mike Malone, a.k.a. Rollo Banks, who is one of the all-time goats in the industry and whose own artistic lineage goes all the way back to Honolulu when he took over Sailor Jerry's shop in 1973. So you see what we're dealing with here, folks. I'm talking about three generations of tattooing and the history and the stories and the knowledge that comes along with it. So sit back, relax, pour yourself some Sailor Jerry, and let's go! Yeah, what's up, Josh? How are you, man?
Good. Long time no see.
It's been what? Warped Tour? Is that 2008? 2009?
2008. 2008. It's been a minute. And I remember doing, hand poke tattoos in Cleveland?
Yep.
Underneath the bridge on the cinder blocks?
Yeah, that's right. That's right. Yeah, man. That was the Warped Tour. I mean, was awesome, of course. For us, though, it was, for most bands, it's just a big party. But yeah, we had so many great friends on that thing and so many great memories. And I always laugh talking about it because usually for a band, the best part of your day is supposed to be when you play live, right? You know, and for us on that tour, like the crowds just, they just hated us because we weren't like a screamo band. We weren't like, you know, we just didn't quite fit into that Warped thing.
Yeah.
And so,
for that version,
you know,
of Warped Tour. Yeah.
Yeah. For that version of Warped Tour. Yeah, exactly. So, you know, it was always like the plane was like the worst. It was the worst part of the day.
That's funny.
Yeah, man. Yeah. Well, it's good to see your face.
Likewise.
Thank you so much for being a guest here on the Sailor Jerry podcast. We are stoked to have you. First and foremost, congratulations on the upcoming 25th anniversary of the Aloha Monkey Tattoo Shop. That's a milestone, you know. So we're going to get into that. We're going to get into all of the history and all that stuff. But first and foremost, how's the party planning going? How are things shaping up?
It's good. We had a 20-year event. So the 25th, you know, we learned from our 20-year, what worked, what didn't, what was successful. And so we are just doing it with that plus some. So we're excited. At our 20-year, we had roughly 20 artists, including, you know, that includes our staff that we have here. We have 7 permanent guys. And so this year we're having 25. And it just keeps getting better. The party planning, I have a great group of people. My fiance Alicia plans most of this stuff, and it's going to be good, really good.
Awesome, awesome! Shout out Alicia for helping get this set up too. Appreciate you. Do you have a live band for the party?
Unfortunately, we don't. That's a difficult one in our parking lot. Although we do own a standalone building, we don't have a band or really any live music. Last at our 20-year, we just had a live, like, acoustical, kind of like some old timers just playing acoustic jams. But no, we don't have a band, and that's the one thing we're missing.
That's what the 30-year is all about, live band. I'm just saying.
We should have El Mariachi Bronx, dude.
Dude, we're writing a new record right now, man. We're writing a new record right now. I'm in the office. I'm in the home studio just working on stuff, trying to record demos during the day and write lyrics at night. So,
taco trucks, and we would love to see something like that happen. Let's plan that.
Hell yeah, man. Hell yeah. Well, we got 5 years, so there's no excuse why we can't get it done.
No.
Awesome, man. Well, before we go into the history of the shop,
sure.
I want to give our listeners your history, you know, the history of you. I want to kind of go into, you know, maybe tell the story of your life going up until the point where you get to meeting Mike Malone, getting in touch with the shop, and that kind of takes over. So, like, where did you grow up? Where did kind of art and tattooing kind of enter the picture for you?
Well, I mean, I grew up in a small town in central Illinois. It's town called Danville, Illinois. It's near Champaign, Urbana, right off of I-70. In those small communities, it wasn't a tiny town. I mean, 35,000 people, but I mean, it was in the center of Illinois. So there wasn't a lot there. There was the University of Illinois, which is in Champaign, but that was 30 minutes away. So as a kid, it was a great town to grow up in because you could ride your bicycle everywhere. You know, eventually when you got into motorized things, you could, you know, scream your four-wheeler down city streets, and it was a good town to grow up in. And as a kid in those small towns, you know, I mean, I did the sports, I did all that, but that really wasn't my thing. I was always just kind of, you know, like all of us, a little bit different, right?
Yeah.
And in those small communities, that wasn't really celebrated, or there wasn't a place for that. I mean, it was like, basically, you know, what do you mean you don't want to play football? You know, like they didn't get that. And so my grandfather was an old World War II aircraft carrier guy, Navy man, and he had some tattoos, of which some of them were from Honolulu. And so I would see he had like the number one man spots covered. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And he died when I was a young boy from cancer, but I would like sit on top of him and like look at his tats and like
put markers around his tats and kind of draw on him because he was just sitting there dying, but he was real cool as far as letting me just kind of doodle on him. But those were my first probably inspirations of tattoos. And then in that small community, we had like a biker shop, you know, that had like a boa in the window, and the kids would ride their bicycles by it and fuck with the boa constrictor. And it was like a chopper shop slash tat shop.
Classic snake in the window.
Exactly. And some of my, and you had, in Illinois at that time, and pretty much up until 2000s, you had to be 21 to get tattooed. So somehow in that small town, some of my 15-year-old friends were getting tattooed. And I would just remember like touch. I couldn't believe that it wouldn't come off because they had youthful skin. I mean, I had seen old man skin with them, but they had youthful skin. And it was just crazy to like see. I think one of my friends, the first thing he got was like the graphics bong skull, the Joker.
Ooh, dude, I was just on eBay looking for an old graphic shirt.
Alicia that logo, just got me one.
Dude, that logo is timeless, dude.
It is the best. Funny story, I wore it to my mechanic buddy's shop because he was putting exhaust on my truck. And on his lift, he had that sticker. And the kid that was helping me was like, and I had the shirt on. And the old man was like, oh my God. And the kid's like, he didn't get it. He didn't know what we were looking at. But so rewind to the chopper shop. So apparently some of my friends were getting these, and some of my friends were a little bit older than me, and they were a little bit more outlaw, you know, ditching school and going to get tattooed. And so I don't know how they got it, because it wasn't like their parents were down with it. But one of them had this skull, this Joker, this graphic skull, and then another one had this Native American Indian. You know, Anthony Kiedis had that. That was like his first. Yeah. And so my friend got one, you know. And anyway, so being an oddball in a small town, not being interested in football, led me to more creative outlets. You know, I mean, you know, once I got out of motorized things of that age of my life, I started to draw, and then music became a big part of it. And it wasn't the music that the people that were playing football were listening to. It was like a little bit tougher music and, you know, a little bit on the edge music. And what that led to was tattoos. And these guys had tattoos, you know, the early bands, the, you know, I mean, Henry Rollins was doused in tattoos. Of course, more mainstream, the Red Hot Chili Peppers were doused, and they were doused in good tattoos. And even earlier, yeah, than that, like the Crew got tattooed by Greg James and shit. I mean, they had nice stuff. And so back then bands had like great tattoos. You know, they weren't all Post Malone'd out with just stickers on their face or hand poke shit. They were like,
yeah,
they had artists that were doing them. And so that was inspiring. And then I got up to the Chicagoland area, about 30 minutes outside the city. My parents got divorced, and then my mom remarried and moved up there. And so that entered high school. And then we were closer to a city. So that means closer to bigger bands, closer to more music. Yeah. And then I could see these people. And then in the city, you got to see, you know, real tattoo shops and more people that had tattoos and more of that cutting edge culture that was creeping in. And I think I was drawn more to punk rock. You know, I liked the Lookout bands and, you know, Epitaph and all that.
Oh, yeah.
And of course, I always dabbled, you know, I mean, 92 was the best year of hip hop. So I always had that on my side.
Yeah, that's the early 90s. I mean, you're talking punk, you're talking hip hop. That is a golden era.
Yes. And so that was my grooming. And, you know, then when I got up there, I was a little bit more into skateboarding. I mean, there was, you know, pavement everywhere in the town I grew up in. There was gravels, so that led more to motorized sports, four wheelers and dirt bikes. But then you get up to the city and it's like, oh, you can skate on this. You can't skate on these, yeah, driveways in a small town with gravel all over the place, you know?
Yeah.
So then I was going out and skateboarding, and a lot of those people had tattoos. And then you see these skaters that start having tattoos. And yeah, then I just started to like pick up the Tat Rag magazines and look around at them. And, you know, there was no chance I was going to get tattooed. You had to be 21 in my town. And yeah, I would just pick up the tattoo magazines. And to me, that was like at that time, tattoo magazines would expose an artist in the middle of them. And so you would learn about these people and you were like, damn, this can be done with tattoos. I mean, these were like rock stars. These were like,
yeah,
it was like band stuff to me. I mean, they were as elevated as that to me. Then I just started to like find out who these people were. And like, then I would get all the issues and see that their pictures were then in the back, smaller pictures of them. And so I was starting to like collect little miniature portfolios of these dudes' stuff and seeing who the hitters were, you know?
Yeah.
You know, when 222 came out, I was just blown away that such an epic shop was there. I mean, I didn't even know about Ed Hardy or anything. I knew about the guys that were trying to be the Ed Hardys. And so, yeah, then I went to school for art. I couldn't make it to an art school because I didn't have any foreign language, but I got to a college and just took art classes. And that kind of disrupted me a bit because I was like being taught two-dimensional drawing by a jewelry major. I was like, what are you teaching drawing for? Yeah. Like, that's when I, you know, and then I'm getting art history from like somebody that is like a ceramics major. And I'm like, wait a second. Like, we're learning about art history, and the way that they're telling you in art history is this dude learned from this dude. He copied this guy's style, and then he became his own after duplicating this master's style. I mean, everybody was doing it. Pollock could do real painting, like real articulate, realistic painting. He chose to do that, but he could paint like that. So, I mean, everybody had a master that they studied under. And yet in school, they weren't pushing that. They were like, oh, you know, your own creativity. It was like so weird. And I don't know. I don't know what it was. It was just not the way that they were showing you others had learned.
Yeah, it's kind of strange, right? Because it's like, I noticed that, you know, art school and art history in general is kind of a, it's a double-edged sword, and it's polarizing for a lot of artists because it's you know, knowledge is power, and it's great to learn the history of everything, especially art, because there's, you know, if anything, at the bare minimum, it just introduces you to a lot of great art and artists that have happened, you know, since the dawn of man or whatever. But there's also a part of it where, like you're saying, you think there's a certain type of structure, learning curves, you know, that's not necessarily always taught, you know, like you're saying. It's like, and that's a big part that's kind of overlooked. And, you know, I know in, you know, in the music world, tattooing world, you know, having a mentor, having, even if it's not someone physically looking over you and teaching you an instrument or how to tattoo, just the idea of looking at the people who have come before you and for inspiration and how that, what their process was and how you can apply it to yourself is a big thing. And it's not always kind of, you know, it's not always taught that way.
Mm-mm. And the schools definitely weren't teaching that. Like you said, it's about what came before you. And the schools were basically like later, years later, when I talked to Ed Hardy, he was like, those places just teach you how to use the medium. They don't teach you anything else. So you can, you know, cause I learned more about drawing and art in tattooing. Because of the mentorship, because of studying a style, because of the discipline and the rigidity of it. And the schools just didn't have that. So they wanted you to go into like graphic design and computer arts. I didn't want that. I wanted to learn like Leonardo learned, you know, or Michelangelo from a master. And so I failed on that. And I picked up getting tattooed. I spent the second year of my college time. I only got 2 years of college in me, but I spent the second year down in Florida in West Palm Beach, Florida, North Palm, a little north of that. And there was this tattoo shop in Lake Worth called Louis Lombi's Tattoo Paradise. And so I'd go in there because you could be 18 to get tattooed in Florida.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. And I was just hitting them up. And I got tattooed there by this guy, Kevin Buckstrip. And he was really great. He took walk-ins, but was also experimenting with custom stuff. And I started to see how a tattoo shop worked and how these guys were learning. They happened to have an apprentice at the time and I got tattooed. And then I was living with my friend Matt, who was in bands and like the Monster Trucks and some other bands, Vacation Bible School. But he was in these bands in Chicago and he went down to Florida, wasn't really playing music. And so we were drawing a lot more together. And I was like, dude, I'm just going to pick up one of these tattoo magazine Spalding rigs and we'll save money on tats. So I picked up the Chuck Spalding rig after we just got professional work done, right? I was like, I'll sleeve your leg out, dude. It'll be fine.
So, I got you.
Yeah. So I have the Huck Spalding How to Tattoo A to Z on his lap as I'm in my living room with like garbage bags over the lazy boy and tattooing his leg. And when I got this thing, it had like a 6 flat to color with and a tiny 3 needle liner that came with it. And, you know, 7 hours into this outline, I was like, this is not how we're getting tattooed, dude. This is not how they're doing us. Like, there's a missing link. And so he's like, got the book upside down in his lap. And he's like, I don't think that, He's like flipping the page. He's like, I think you have to do this. I didn't even read the book. I just like dove in. And I knew something was wrong. And so anyway, I ended up going back to Louis and they wouldn't give me an apprenticeship. They already had an apprentice. And so I found that apprentice at a bridge, like those lift bridges in Florida over the Intercoastal. I saw his car at the lift bridge, like seven cars ahead of me. So I just jumped out of my car and ran up to his car. And I'm like, hey, man, I got this Spalding set up. Can you come to the to my house and just show me how it works? Like, show me what I'm missing. And he's like, no, absolutely not. And I was like, hey, man, like, I'll buy you a bottle of booze or something. And he's like, oh, okay, I'll do it. So it didn't take much. Get him to come back. And he's like, listen, man, these aren't even the needles. This is like technically like a Fisher Price kit. You know, you can't really do much with this. I just wouldn't do it until you find somebody to teach you. So I agreed to that. I was like, you know, you got it, man. It's like, I'm learning myself. I can't tell you shit. I'm an apprentice. But you got to do what I'm doing. You got to get an apprenticeship. So Matt and I decided there was a Bird Productions convention in 97 up in Atlanta. And we found that in the back of one of these tattoo magazines. And so I said, Matt, why don't we go up there and check out this convention? And we were broke. I was working at a restaurant, like bussing tables or waiting tables or something. And he was working as a valet. And he's like, all right, I'll drive up with you. I was like, I'll get the hotel room. We'll just make it happen. These hitters are going to be there, man. Guy Atchison, Joe Capobianco, Jack Rudy's going to be there. We got to check these dudes out. Chris O'Donnell's going to be there because Chris O'Donnell and Tim had just opened up their shop. And I was stoked. All these hitters. So we drive up there. The new Strung Out album had just came out. So we were just jamming that the whole way up.
What one? Teenage Wasteland, Suburban yes. Blues? Or Yeah. That's a great album.
It is so good. And, you know, he had a lower form sleeve, the lead singer of that band. And so we drove up there just cranking that the whole time. And we get there. And we have a hotel room overlooking the floor of the convention hall. And I'm just like, peering out people. I'm like, oh, look who it is. Oh, that dude. Oh, dude. I was total fanboy out. But I had these flyers that I had made with a drawing on it. And I took an 8.5 by 11 in different colors. And I had my drawing printed on it in four sections. And I cut them out with just scissors. I mean, so ghetto. And it said, in search of an apprenticeship. And I went to each one of these booths. This is so lame. But I went to each one of these booths and I dropped it off. Like day one of the convention. And one of the only people, I mean, there's three people that were super kind. Sean Anderson was cool. He's like, yo, this isn't really it. And Joe Capobianco was cool. He gave me the time of day. But Jack Rudy grabs my arm and he's like, hey, kid, did you drop this right here? And he's a big, intimidating dude, you know? I mean, he's pretty thug. So I was like, yeah. And he's like, all right, man, this isn't how this is done. And he like gave me some time. He's like, you got to get an apprenticeship. You got to find, you're going to get so many no's. But when you get that yes, check to see that they're worth that yes.
Yeah, and that's good advice.
He's like, it could be anybody that says yes. But he goes, you already know, you knew me. You knew who all these people are. If you're knowing that already, don't settle for just somebody teaching you. And I was like, all right. So, that was really cool advice. And then, you know, we found out Matt and I were used to eating steaks on Friday night back in our dirty old apartment. And we found out these guys are all, I asked the bellhop, I was like, where are these guys going tonight? And he's like, they're going to get steaks. And I was like, oh, I love steaks. You know, we're going to go. And he's like, they're going to a place called Ruth Chris. And I'm like, oh yeah, that sounds good. I have no idea what this place is, but we get in this thing and we're in just white t-shirt and jeans. We sit down at a table near the tattooers because I just wanted to absorb whatever I could. What are they talking about? What do they do? And Matt looks at the menu and he's like, there's absolutely, I'm not buying anything. I'm like, you have to buy something. We're going to get kicked out of here. You have to buy something. And he's like, I can't afford this shit, Josh. I'm like, dude, you're going to put whatever you need to on a credit card and go total broke. YOLO. So that we get to stay. Yeah. And he's like, nope. So this fool gets a salad. And I get like mashed potatoes, a freaking filet, a la carte, the whole thing, just so that we can remain there. Anyway, we end up eating dinner. Didn't learn any secrets, but I did get an idea from Jack that I had to look for the right thing. So I eventually spent Christmas with my parents. Went down to see at some shops in Chicago, but I was still too young to even get tattooed in Chicago. So I ended up at J Dragon with Fat Joe. And he wanted to just charge me whatever. He was going to ignore the law and just charge me whatever. I was like, I don't have that kind of ends. And he was sitting there counting money in front of me and shit. And I'm like, I don't have that kind of money, dude. So then my mom says that there's the shop that opened outside the Navy base, like 15 minutes down the road from us. Why don't you go check them out? So I went down there, and the first person I met was Keith Underwood. He was working. He was the apprentice. And yep. I walked in there and met Keith, and Denise Wolf owned the shop. And she had been married to Wes Grimm before, and she had been married to Bob Oslin. Bob Oslin taught Scott Harrison and Guy Atchison at the same time, and had a real successful shop down in Chicago. And so Denise had clout. She had an Ed Hardy tat.
Yeah.
Keith was cool, but he didn't want me around. So I ended up getting tattooed by Denise. And I had originally, back at that chopper shop when I was 17, my dad took me to get a little four skull combo at that Mike's Tattoo and Chopper Shop in that small town Danville. And that guy was cool, but I wanted to add on to it. And so I couldn't afford to do it at that convention in Atlanta. Denise ended up adding some skulls to it. And instantly I'm like, yo, where do I buy an autoclave? And then I was like, never mind. Hey, do you do apprenticeships? And she was like, oh boy, slow down. No, you can't buy an autoclave. And that's crazy. And secondly, no, I'm not teaching you how to tattoo. Let's just do this. Which is so funny because I echo that all the time now. You know, like these kids come in just like that. Can I get an apprenticeship? So ends up, I go back to Florida and she ends up getting pregnant and calls me and says, you know, hey, Keith's going to go out on the floor. I need an apprentice to start covering my bases for when I'm going to be out. She had a very small shop. She had a heavy Navy load that came through twice a month and on the weekends. And she's like, I'll teach you. And I was like, oh shit. All right. So finished that little bit of schooling and went back up, got my associate's degree, went back up there to Chicagoland. Keith was pissed that she was bringing on another person. He thought there wasn't enough business to go around. And then,
classic Keith. Oh, yeah.
And then, yeah. And then, you know, he liked, and pretty quickly he liked having another young person around, you know, somebody that looked up to him because he was a little older than me. Somebody that was into the kind of the same music, spend nights talking about these tattoo icons that we were learning about and tattooing because he knew more than I did. And I came in with an idea that I was going to be the next Guy Atchison. I was going to break all the walls of tattooing down and I was going to be the new thing. And the first day of work, Denise hands me The American Tattoo Master by Sailor Jerry. And I read that thing front to back and then read it again. And then I came in and I was like, oh, this he's the real deal. Like the letters that he was writing back and forth to Ed, you got to peer into his soul and his mind. And I was like, this is the real stuff. And she's like, yeah, kid, that's what I'm saying. So I ditched my idea of Guy Atchison. And then Keith and I just nerded out on Ed Hardy, Mike Malone, Sailor Jerry, and just learning as much as we could.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, it's time to take a quick commercial break and make some Sailor Jerry pregame punch. How are we going to do that? 6 parts Sailor Jerry spiced rum, 1 part lemon lime soda, 6 parts spicy ginger beer, 3 parts pineapple juice, and 1.5 parts lime juice. How are we going to make it? We're going to take all those ingredients and we're going to put it in a punch bowl. We're going to fill that punch bowl with ice and we're going to serve it in a highball glass and garnish it with some lime. You can find this recipe and a million others like it on SailorJerry.com. Now back to the show.
You know, I want to kind of shift here to, you referenced Sailor Jerry. We can go kind of back with the story of Aloha Monkey. And I want to go back to, you know, I want to go back to Honolulu. Okay. Cause I want to go, you know, you had Jerry's shop and you had, it was Mike and Ed that went there to visit him, right?
Mm-hmm. 72. Yeah.
72. So they go back, and I'll let you tell the story because you obviously know it better than I do, but they go back, they learn from him. And when Norman Collins dies in 73, it was Mike who takes over his shop, right?
So Jerry obviously was
light years ahead of everyone that was doing it. And I'd say everyone, and people could argue, yeah, well, I mean, there was this guy and there was this guy and he bit, you know, Brooklyn Joe Lee. Okay. Got it. But we just talked about everybody has a reference. Everybody has a mentor. This dude had the ability to take designs that were almost 100 years old and make little distilled pieces of perfection. I'm talking his ability to paint, his ability for hand to tool it, not only on paper and make these designs actually have symmetry, life, use a circle guide, have, you know, true balance, be clean. The skulls look like skulls, not like a melted ice cream cone. He did so much unpacking of these 100-year-old designs. It was almost like there's no missing link. It's just like there was this stuff, and then all of a sudden there's Sailor Jerry. It's crazy. Yeah. Even his early stuff, he had such an eye for it. That's just in one part of his life. But his ability to distill all these crap images that were 100 years old and make them perfect is unbelievable. So Ed already had a career at Hardy. Albeit a very early career, he was already tattooing when he met Mike Malone. And he met Mike Malone through this art show that Mike was curating in a museum in New York on tattooing. And so Mike was the curator. Now, Mike wasn't tattooing. He was a photographer. He was doing some psychedelic, like, music venue stuff, like that oil and water, like, psychedelic stuff that would go up on the big screen, like with an overhead projector. And he was like... living in New York, and he ends up getting in with this curator and he starts curating this tat show. He had ran across Tom DeVito on the street and saw this dude that had actual beautiful tattoos. Cause Tom's were from Huck Spalding and Huck could tattoo his ass off and he had real good tattoos. And that wasn't seen in New York at the time. So then Mike starts just photographing him and spending time around Tom. And then he finds out about Ed Hardy. And so he's curating this show on tattooing. And so he reaches out to Ed Hardy. Well, then Ed Hardy says, we got to reach out to Jerry. He's the head of the whole gang, man. And so Mike and Ed meet at this tattoo thing, this art show, first one ever about tattooing. And Ed falls in love with the fact that Mike can take photographs. And the key thing here is, Mike could take photographs of three-dimensional art and make it two-dimensional so these guys and Mike could develop his own film so they could then flatten these images out and now they have reference. These dudes didn't have Japanese references. So when they roll up in a museum and Mike can take a picture of a big Japanese ukiyo-e print and flatten that thing out and Ed can trace it and make a back piece, it's like, oh, now we're in business.
Yeah. That's awesome.
Making their own reference. So then Ed's like, you got to come meet Jerry. So then they go and meet Jerry. And then that's when it started to crack off. They would go and they would just milk on him and learn from him. And he wanted to create basically the, you know, for this anniversary party that we're having, we call it Tat University. My friend Miguel Uzi, he coined this place Tat University. Well, Jerry and Ed were trying to actually make a Tat University, like where artists could come to get better in Hawaii.
Yeah.
So technically the first one was like him, Ed, and Jerry, Ed, and Mike. And then they had Oguri come out. So now they have a connection to the Japanese, the first Japanese person to ever meet with the white guys to do tattoos. So Mike got his arm outlined. Ed had to one up him and get his back outlined. And Jerry got like a little peony or something on him. But that was like a merger right there. That was the beginning of East Meets West, you know? And they were all just right there pivotal. And so then when Jerry dies, he had told his wife, you either sell the shop, because Jerry was secretive, you know, he wanted to keep this thing close to the people that deserved it and forget the rest of Turd Hill. He didn't want any of them to get it. So he said to his wife, you either sell the shop to Ed Hardy, Zeke Owens, Mike Malone, or you burn it to the ground. And his wife was down to burn it to the ground. Well, Ed was studying with the Japanese as the first white man in Japan to be doing tattoos on the regs, like on big scale. And so he didn't want to leave that. Zeke was off floating around
Malaysia or something and just being Zeke. He didn't want to do nothing with it. They couldn't even reach him. And so Mike took it. And Mike didn't have but, I mean, a couple years tattooing under his
belt. Yeah, I was going to say, was he the least experienced of the three at that time?
Oh, for sure. For sure. Yeah, I mean, like, he tells the story. He always tell me he's only got 3 years of tattooing before he took over Jerry's. And I think it could have been even less. But, yeah, he had no real nothing behind him. So he sits in Jerry's, and now he's got to take care of Superman's freaking ice castle. You know, it's like, wow, what pressure. But he did it, and we wouldn't know
so about
it.
Did he make the move from New York to Hawaii?
Yep, straight away.
Damn, dude.
Yep. And then got plugged with all of it. You know, everything was there. We wouldn't have, you know, the Aloha Monkey sheet. That's the original Aloha Monkey sheet.
No way.
We wouldn't have this in an original pinup girl that he did. It's front and backside. We wouldn't have any of that if it wasn't for Mike. It would have just all been lost to a fire, and there it goes.
Yeah, that's incredible, man. I mean, to be able to go, and, you know, obviously that's where, you know, Mike's journey really picks up too. But the idea of, you know, you think about, you know, what yourself would be going through at that time in your life, thinking about, you know, your own journey as a human being, but then you also have the artistic, you know, knowledge and respect to preserve what he walked into too, and realize how important it is. Yep. You know, so it's like, that's, I mean,
kudos. That's,
yeah. Kudos, man. For sure. For sure. And so how long did he run that shop before he bounced? Cause at one point he's like, Hawaii's beautiful, but I gotta get out of here.
Yeah, no, he got the rock fever for sure. Starts to get small there. I mean, he'd bounced a couple times. He went to Seattle for a little bit for a season, and it was too depressing. Maybe it was a year. He went to Austin for a while, had a relationship there, worked for the Austin Chronicle. He was an editor of the art of the cover of the Austin Chronicle. So a lot of the covers of the Austin Chronicle have his illustrations in them.
That's rad. I didn't know that.
Oh, yeah. There's some great ones that he did. He did every Zodiac for a year, front covers for the Austin Chronicle. So like the tiger, the ox,
yeah,
the snake. Yeah, it was cool.
Incredible, yeah, man. So where, let's talk about the merge of you, Aloha Monkey, and Mike. And real quick, can I ask just a dumb question? I know he went by Rollo Banks. What's the origin of that? What's the connection of that?
That's just something his peers called him, based off an Archie comic. There was a character in it called Rollo Banks, and it was kind of like a Richie Rich kid.
Okay.
You know, you'd have to know that reference from comics to understand, or cartoons to understand that. But like a blend of a Richie Rich and a Scrooge McDuck, you know, like Rollo was into making some money and having nice shit. And so he got Rollo Banks out of it.
Nice. Cool. Yeah. I've always wondered that. And I've always, you know, it's been one of those things I'm always like, you know, I figure this is a safe space. I can ask that question.
Yeah. Yeah. yeah, for sure.
So let's talk about you and Mike and the Aloha. How does it all come together? You know, you're apprenticing in Chicago.
Yep.
How do you end up in Minnesota?
Well, let me tell you that's how Keith is a huge part of that. And Denise, all props to Denise Wolf, man, because that woman took two kids that weren't going to do nothing and helped them do something. And the very first thing she did was introduce us to who the people we needed to focus on were, and that's Sailor Jerry, Mike Malone, and Ed Hardy. She had Mike Malone flash in her shop, and I had never seen it or knew about it. She introduced me to the Tattoo Time publications, which were essentially the first tattoo magazines Ed Hardy did. She forced me to see that stuff and to read it and to tell her about what I read. She was so good about so many things about tattooing. She was excellent about the line work. She was excellent about the technical aspects, how to approach different skin types. She was a technician's technician, man. And I still use so much of what she taught me to this day. But yeah, I wouldn't know who Mike Malone was if it wasn't for her. So basically, Keith and I are kicking it together all the time. We wanted to buy these tattoo machines, the Sailor Jerry Bulldog that had came out, and couldn't buy one. And so Keith's like, let's just look at the back of Tattoo Time. Let's call Mike. So he calls Mike out of the back of the freaking Tattoo Time, calls him at the shop.
And that starts basically a pen pal relationship between us. He was stoked that these two young kids, he told us we were terrible. He said we should probably quit. But he had these two kids that worked near a Navy base, and he was blown away that the Navy base, because there's only two and they distilled it down to one. They got rid of Jacksonville, and so it was only the Great Lakes Navy base. And so if you were a Navy, you had to cycle through there as boot camp. And he was blown away because Honolulu wasn't doing any Navy. I mean, really, there's no wartime. It's empty. Yeah. And he was blown away that that actually went away in his business, but also that we had that. And he was asking, like, well, what are they getting? He was real interested. And so we would hit him up for designs, like, oh, this kid wants a Popeye. And there wasn't a ton of reference. All right, guys, there wasn't Google. You had to buy books. And so we had hit him up, and he would send us through a fax machine a design, and then we would have to send him $20 in the mail, and it'd take forever to get there, but it was the principle. And we'd sit there at the fax machine, Keith and I, waiting for the design slowly to come through and then be able to trace it and put it on the kid. And he helped us with several designs. Actually, huge story about that. One of them was a sun and some water that this Navy kid wanted. And flash forward 20 some years, and I get to see this kid because a guy that's working for me grew up with this kid as best friends. He went off to the Navy. He said, hey, I think this guy got tattooed by you at Lucky Seven. And it's the design that Rollo helped me draw.
No way.
Yeah, it was crazy. But yeah, so we become pen pals. And then Keith was always super interested in A, making money, and B, the mechanics of tattoo machine building. He had put up a little machine building part in Denise's shop. And so he was assembling just parts that he bought from Spalding and National, and he was assembling his own things. And him and Nick Colella got in on a circle frame together. And they did that. And so when he got with Mike, he was interested in how's the Rollomatic work? How does that do? How do we build those? Blah, blah, blah. And Rollo liked the fact that this kid was interested, and he had youthful hands. Rollo had old stuff, couldn't put them all together. And so they basically jammed out on machines. And so Keith and I would visit him. And then he was basically like, look, if I'm opening a shop in Minnesota, if you guys know anybody that's good, not you, send them my way. Well, then Keith and I just showed up, and he's like, not you guys. And we're like, what do you mean?
Please, anyone but you two.
Yeah. And then it basically stuck. You know, once Keith was off the apprentice deal and he was working the floor, he gave Denise a year. We were doing that pen pal thing for a year. And then he came up here. And so he opened the shop with Mike. Mike was like, all right, I'll take you. And I had obligations back in Chicago. I wasn't going to ditch out on Denise, who let me in the door. And so it really wasn't even offered. They didn't have enough business. It was a brand new shop. So he took Keith and then started building the Rollomatic. Keith was essential in building that out for him. And then I would just bounce up here every weekend that I had. I would get off work at 10 o'clock. I would drive until, a 7-hour drive. Get here early in the morning. I would stay with Mike. I would stay with Keith, and I'd work with Mike and Keith for 2 days, and then I'd drive back for my next day at the shop. We didn't open until 2, so I could leave in the morning. And I did that for a year, and then, Keith had set it up. Keith was like, "Yo, man, we could get like a duplex. Put him in the bottom, and we'll take care of him, and then you and I live in the top." And so, yeah, Rod, I remember getting a call. I was living in my parents' basement, and Rawl's like, "Hey, how would you like to live with Uncle Rollo?" And I was like, oh my God. And you don't understand, guys. Like, you might look at that as kind of corny, but this is like, I was taught to respect my elders and shit. So this is like your mentor, a guy you look up to, and fucking like Eric Clapton, Ozzy Osbourne. I mean, it's like the biggest act.
Yeah. He's one of the goats, man. You know, it's like, it's also, you know, like the thing I love about, you know, trade work, tattooing culture, anything like that is, you know, there's like you see how important persistence is, how important it is to just work your ass off. And, you know, not only is this guy, like you're saying, a mentor, one of the greats, but it's also taken into perspective all the work you've put up until this point. So when you get that call, you know, it's like, hell yeah. You know, it's like, that's a life-changing moment, you know?
Yeah, it was big. And I remember just like, yeah, man, I'll be there as soon as I can. And I told Denise, and she was 100% supportive. And so it was me and Keith living with the old man and working with him. And I worked part-time at his wife's shop, who was a couple suburbs away. And then Mike had point blank put this Aloha Monkey in a specific area. And he chose Burnsville because back then the phone books mattered. And the way that it works is 35 goes from freaking Mexico to Canada.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
At Minnesota, it breaks into two and it goes St. Paul, Minneapolis. And then it goes back to 135 up to Canada. Well, Mike puts Burnsville's right down here at the V. He puts the shop there so you can equally advertise to both surrounding suburbs of the cities. And it was perfect. And so, yeah, that's why he chose Burnsville. That's why we're here. That's why the place works. And we got to live with him. And that was a riot in itself. Just living with your mentor and working with them was incredible.
Yeah, I can imagine, man. I know. I know there's got to be just a lifetime of lessons, but you know, in talking about Mike, I always just feel like it's such a cool thing to be able to talk to someone who, you know, was so close to him. And anytime you have that sort of firsthand knowledge, you know, if you could pick a thing or two, what were some of the things that you learned from him, whether it be life or tattooing or anything?
Oh man. There's a lot. I mean, first and foremost, you keep the hours that you have advertised. You know what I mean? You keep the hours. If it says 12 to 8, you're there 12 to 8, not 12 to 7:50, not, you know, 12:10 to 7:40. You're there 12 to 8. And you treat the shop and working in a tattoo shop like it's an 8-hour job. He got this from Jerry. So the reason these guys painted a bunch is they didn't have a lot of tattoos to do. So they were painting because they treated the shop time, whatever the shop hours were, as a job. So if you didn't have skin coming in, you're working on getting better. And I don't see a lot of tattooers doing that anymore. I don't see them drawing. I'm not a huge fan of painting all the time. I think that's a great exercise for what it's worth. I think drawing is more important and honing that skill. But you don't see that. You don't see tattooers treated like an 8-hour job. You see them on their phones. You see them dicking around. but you don't see them treatment like that. So Rollo was insistent that is an 8-hour job and you do something for your trade. I mean, back then we were making our own needles and a lot of our own inks. And so we had to do all that maintenance, but, yeah, treat your shop like it's a job and give it the respect that it deserves. And think about how fortunate we are to do what we do. You know, a lot of tattooers now bitch because they're not asking for their style. Well, Rollo and a lot of these old guys weren't into the one trick pony. You know, you don't point yourself into a corner and just stay there. That's of no value to them. Rollo was like, think how fortunate we are. We get to sit here and do our drawing and hone our skill. And we get to paint whatever we want. And then somebody comes in and they ask us to build them a bridge. And then we build them a bridge. And then they walk out and we go back to doing the kind of art and fun things that we want that are going to make us expressed. And then somebody comes in and says, hey, I want you to build me a fence. And then you build them a fence. And, you know, where in the world do you get to do that, where you get to be expressive and do your thing and make some money? You know what I mean? Like, he's like, if you give it the respect, if you give tattooing the respect that it deserves, it will give you respect back.
Yeah. 100%, man. I mean, you get what you give, you know, with stuff like that. The more you put into it, the more respect you give, you know, the craft, your art, your work, you know, the more it gives back to you. I mean, I know that that's the same with music too. I mean, there's so many people who just get into music who, you know, they don't really respect all the hard work and all the nuances that go into, you know, writing a song or the dedication it takes to be a band on the road and all these things. And, you know, it's like there's certain levels of fame or achievement of success that someone like that might reach, but they're always going to be robbed of like the real purpose of what it is that they're doing.
Yep.
You know what I mean? And it's like, it's got to be disappointing on your end sometimes when you see people who don't appreciate the full spectrum of what it's all about. You know what I mean?
Yeah, it is. But I love tattooing so much. Like I tell a lot of my guys quite often, I'm like, I care way more about tattooing than your feelings. So I'm just going to be honest. You know what I mean? It's just like, this is so much more important. Like I tell people to be prepared. I think preparation is something that Mike was good at as well. Is you've done these things, you've honed it so much that when it's game time, you can shoot the ball. So preparation's huge. You know, like when I'm going into an outline, it's kind of, it's like a cage match for me. It's like, there's this thing that I'm doing or there's death. Yeah. I don't think it's a nonchalant thing. I think it's important. And part of that is, yes, it's not even ego based. It's like, yes, it's their arm, but this is like important to tattooing. It's like, it has to be right. It could be any arm. It's not just that person's arm or yeah. back or whatever, but it has to be right. It has to look right. It has to be applied right. It does matter where that leaf sits. It does matter how that fits on the hips. It does matter. And so it's this thing I'm doing or death.
That's yeah. And then, you know, what's interesting about that is it's cool you say that because there people always apply that kind of idea to like the big picture, you know, like I'm going to do, you know, I'm either going to be a musician or I'm going to die. I'm going to be a tattoo artist or I'm going to die. I'm going to be the best I can be or this or that. There's no plan B. You always hear about artists saying that, you know, no plan B, I'm going to do this. But it's funny how, you know, many people forget to look like it goes deeper than that. Like in order for that to happen, in order for the big picture to be do or die, all the details have to be do or yes. die too. You know, like you're saying, it's like every tattoo has to be do or die. Every line has to be important. Every yeah. drawing, you know, like everything you're doing has to matter, you know? And it's funny how sometimes there's a disconnect with that between the day to, you know, the day to day ins and outs of a trade or a craft or a career versus, you know, just the kind of big picture overall achievement, success, all the stuff in between has to be do or die too, you know?
Yeah. I love what you said. There's a disconnect between the big picture and the daily discipline. Yeah. And that goes back to the 8 hours in the shop. It's the daily discipline. You know, and like you said, it could be music, it could be whatever. But if your big picture is dreamy and do or die, it's like, do your actions show that?
Yeah.
Daily actions? Do your minute by minute actions be showing that? I don't know, man.
Okay. So, you know, unfortunately, we lose Mike. I want to talk about you becoming shop owner here of the Aloha. Sure. I want to talk about that transition.
Well, that was, it went down. I'd only been tattooing 3 years when Mike approached me. Keith had already left to go. He got married and went back to Chicagoland area. So it was me and Mike, and we had this apartment. And then I left that apartment to live with another person. And Mike was just finishing up before he was going to go take care of his sick mother. She was back in Rona Park where he was from. And he's like, look, I got to bail. I got to go take care of my mom. Basically I'm either selling you the shop or it's closing. And I'm like, pardon me? I mean, Grimes' book, it just came out about this dude that goes around the world and like sees all these amazing things and comes back a better artist. And I read this book from Grimes and I'm just like, oh, Mike, no, I want to go around the world and I want to get good at this thing, but, and I'm not even good enough. And how am I going to take care of this? And he goes, whoa, 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 kid. I know I've been hard on you, but you need about 10,000 miles of outline and about 5,000 miles of square color, and you're going to be great. And I was like, oh shit. All right.
Hell he goes, yeah. So
how about this? I sweeten the pot. I'll just sell it to you for what I bought Jerry's for in 1973. How's that? And I went, oh my God. How long do you plan on being around? I mean, I can't get a loan. You know, I hit up my dad. He's like, stupid idea. Hit up my grandfather before my step grandfather before he died. He's like, absolutely not. I have no registered account that I've made any dollars ever. So how am I getting a loan for anything? And he says, let's just work it out. And so I said, I mean, when are you thinking of leaving? He's like 6-9 months. I don't know. I'm like, all right. So I work 7 days a week at two different shops. And then by that time, I was just at the Aloha Monkey. But for a while there, I was working at his wife's shop and that shop. And just 7 days a week, man. And I was eating ramen noodles. And my mom was a frugal woman. She grew up in Illinois and, you know, had an outhouse when she was a kid. And so she taught me about how to save and not live above your means. And so I knew about the disciplinary act of doing that. And thank God for her. I call her my backwoods Buddha because there's just things that she shouldn't know. You know, she's not highly educated, but she's got some kind of enlightenment that's
unheard of.
I like that.
So yeah, my backwoods Buddha. She taught me how to discipline myself and go for something. So me and Mike were watching The Sopranos. It was out for season releases at that time, and we were watching The Sopranos on Sundays. So after work, I would go grab some food, and then I'd bring it over to his place, and we would sit down, have some Italian food, and watch Sopranos. Well, this one time, I grabbed this old briefcase from a thrift store, and I knew I had gotten enough money to buy it from him. And so I filled it with the cash, put it in the shitty old briefcase, and after dinner, I put it up on the coffee table and slid it to him. And I was like, there you go, Mike. And he's like, what's this? He like opens it up. Oh my God. And I was like, I'd like to buy that shop. And he's like, it's yours. And so I got to keep everything in it. You know, he gave me, I don't know if you can see him, but Jerry's original reference books are up here. He didn't want to move them again. And that's a crazy story. In those reference books, because I believe everything's connected in some way or another. I'm not necessarily hip to how, but everything's connected. So in the books, they're brittle, they're sun bleached, they're dry. So I'm like digging through them, just looking at them. They're pretty busted. So I'm flipping through them, and inside the book there is this monkey acetate. Probably can't see it. But
oh shit. No way.
The only thing in there as a bookmark was an acetate of a freaking monkey. Of an Aloha monkey scratching his ass.
Oh my God, dude.
So I was like, no way. That's wild. But yeah, bought the shop from Mike, and then I was a 20-year-old or 21-year-old shop owner. And that was crazy. We had three guys, a piercer, and me and one other tattoo artist. And then it was on. I just tried to do what I saw him do well and not do what I saw him not do well. I mean, there were times he would break the credit card machine, be like, there's not enough cash. Credit card machine's broke. I was like, it's not broke. These people go broke on credit card. You have to have a credit card here. And he's like, nope, it's broken. Can't use it. I was like, all right. So there was just things that I refused to go back to, you know? Yeah. And all of it was trial and error. I mean, there were things that didn't work, and then we got rid of those, and things that worked, we kept them. And then I started to travel quite a bit. I was real secretive in the beginning, you know, because I was young and didn't know a lot of people. In 2002, I started to go out. Well, in 2001, I got my chest done by Ed Hardy.
Awesome.
Because I wasn't going to get tattooed by my scrub friends. I was going to get tattooed by the greats. So yeah. I got my chest done by Ed Hardy. A year later, got my ribs done by him. And he's always been gracious to me with the connection with Mike. He's always been really cool answering any questions I had. He's been really, you know, everybody on his birthday and shit takes all these pictures and posts. Look at me with Ed Hardy. I mean, I have tons of stories about me and Ed Hardy. I just never busted his balls to take a picture. So he was just a good friend in tattooing and a great mentor. And still is. I just saw him a year ago. And then 2002, I started to go down and see Bob in L.A. I was dating a girl. She had a sister in L.A. And so, yeah, every couple months, she'd want to go see her sister. I'd want to go see Bob. So then started getting tattooed by Bob. And then I brought all that stuff back, and I would see what works in these other shops and be like, that definitely doesn't work. We can't do that. And then the monkey just started to evolve in what it is.
Awesome, man. That's incredible. You know, I'm sorry for taking up so much of your time here, but it's so cool. It's so cool.
And we haven't talking even to you. A lot, so I get it.
I know. It's crazy. But one of the things I was reading about, which I, you know, I just wanted to ask real quick, is the story of the Aloha monkey, as far as you know it. Is the story, do you think that story is true?
I do. I think it's true because of who Jerry was. And how little of his life was a lie. You know what I mean? He was just true. And the sources that have told me these stories, like Ed, Mike, Candy, I got to go with
it. Trusted sources. Yeah. So the story is that, you know, he had a monkey in the shop, right? And did they tattoo the monkey? They actually tattooed the monkey. Okay, so they put the AL and the HA because the monkey had...
Monkey's name is Romeo.
Romeo, that's right. Romeo had a habit of bending over and greeting people.
Yep.
And that's...
But the rest of the story goes like this. So Romeo had this, he had been trained to bend over. You know, Mike got him when he was in the China Sea area. That's why Rollo, that was his tour. He wanted to go back after World War II, and he wanted to serve. When they did what they did to Pearl Harbor, he wanted to serve. He was too old, so he became a merchant marine. Then he goes to the South China Seas. That's where he does his tour. Comes back with this monkey, trains the monkey. Monkey bends over in a cage near the front door anytime he sees a white sailor outfit. Jerry ends up tattooing the monkey, like you said. Then one day Jerry comes in the shop. The monkey has gotten out of the cage. There's diarrhea and black ink everywhere. It had gotten into his ink and it had been drinking his black ink. He doesn't know what to do about Romeo, so he puts Romeo back in the cage, calls his Chinese herbalist because he loved the Chinese people and he could actually speak Mandarin a little bit. He could write it too. And trying to figure out how to save Romeo's life. What's going to happen to Romeo? And in walk two sailors because he didn't shut the door. They think he's open. Romeo doesn't bat an eye, bends over to salute the sailors, and diarrhea black ink shit all over the sailors. And then Jerry just thought that was the funniest thing he'd ever seen. So he drew this design of a monkey with a shit-eating grin bent over. And Rollo used that name here because, again, the importance of the Yellow Pages at that time. Acme, AAA, all that, you know what I mean?
The A, yeah.
So the AL, he's right there. Also, he wanted to piss off these, conservative, cold-hearted Lutherans with something a little bit more funny.
So. Yeah, that's great, man. That's such a classic story. All right, so just a couple questions here from the internet. Do you have to have tattoos to be a great tattoo artist?
It definitely helps. And I would say, yes, you do, because you have to have some skin in the game. Like I said, I think all this stuff's connected. And so if there's not a flesh offering, you're not going to get much out of this. Yeah. Who's going to buy shoes off a barefoot shoe salesman?
See, I tend to agree with you. You know, I know that there might be exceptions to the rule where, you know, you have a great artist who hasn't necessarily received a bunch of tattoos. But I just don't see, I don't see how.
Yeah, Kuranuma, Horiyoshi too. That's about it. That was in history. That's about it. Do you go under anesthesia? Let's go back to the reality of the world. Skin offering. You have to have a skin offering to get something out of this business. And what business do you have being in something that you're not willing to test the waters of yourself? You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I'm not buying whiskey off a sober guy. You know? So... It's just not happening. So anyway, you got to have something in the game. And if you're going to go under anesthesia, like you're going to lose all the valor of getting a tattoo. It's just fake.
All right. A couple last, we're going to wrap this up here. I swear. Okay. We're going to bring it back to the party. Okay.
Yeah.
We got 25 years, of the Aloha Monkey, coming up 26th through the 28th.
Yeah.
Right. Of April. And I'm guessing throughout your years, you've been to a lot of parties. I want to hit you with a little fill in the blank. You can fill in the blank. Okay. This is a Tupac Shakur song. Okay. It's Ain't Nothing But a What Party?
I don't know. I don't listen to Tupac.
Ain't Nothing But a Gangster Party. Ain't Nothing But a Gangster Party.
I'm listening into him.
Okay. What type of party does the band Black Flag like to have?
What kind of a party do they like to have?
Yeah.
I don't know. A hardcore party?
A TV party.
Oh, Jesus. You're trying
Come on.
This is the trivia game? Been my years in a tattoo shop, bro.
I was up late last night. You know, I was in bed and all of a sudden it hit me, these questions. And I was like, oh, these are so great. I got to get up. I got to write these.
Do another one then. I'm excited to see
you. All right. So What type of party does Oingo Boingo throw?
Oh, fuck. Give it to me, Music Man.
A dead man's party. It's a dead man's party. Oingo Boingo. You've never heard that song?
I have heard Oingo Boingo, and that is probably one of the bands that most people have heard and wouldn't even know that the name of the band.
That's true. It's true. Yeah, I'll be fully honest. Danny Elfman, truly scares me. He's a pretty freaky dude. Have you seen now he's like super jacked? He's got all he's got weird tats and stuff.
Yeah.
He's a wild card. Okay. Where does Miley Cyrus like to party?
The USA.
Nice. And I heard that whisper in the I heard that whisper. All right. The Leslie Gore song, you complete the sentence here. It's my party and I'll blank if I want to.
Cry if I want to.
There you go, my man. All right. Last two questions here.
Yeah.
We're going to go back in time. Bill and Ted show up at the party. Okay. All of a sudden, phone booth comes down. Bill and Ted get out. They go, Josh, anywhere in history, any time, any era, any place, let's go. Where are you going to go first and why?
Wow, that's a tough one. I got two.
Yeah, hit me.
All right, the first one, I would go back to the time of Christ. I would go back to like 33 AD, 38.
Or, all the way back.
I want to see that. I want to see what was up. I want to be firsthand account.
I like that.
I'm a history buff and, you know, I love Jesus and I've also done enough psychedelics to see that everything's connected and I want to know, I want to be there. I'm not saying I would even have the balls to be there, but I want to be there.
Yeah, well, you can always just jump back into the phone booth and take off when it gets hairy. Yeah,
and then the second place I'd want to be is 1970s tattooing. Like 70s, right? And all this that we've been talking about popped off. I think it would have been an epic time to be there. I would have liked to have been around Mike and the guys when they were learning this stuff because I got to know them as old men. And I would have loved to have seen them when they were, you know, shitting their pants like I was at a young man's age.
Hell yeah, man. Hell yeah. Awesome, Josh. All right. Last question here. It's a little bit of a doozy, but what to you is the meaning of life?
To me, the meaning of life is you only get one ride in this flesh sack. So find the way to kill the ego and live more in the rhythm of your spirit body. Now that's applicable to so many things from martial arts to just walking down the street to being in a relationship. But I think it's the death of the ego and the focus of what keeps us all, what we all have in common in spirit.
Hell yeah, man. That's awesome, brother. That's awesome. All right. Josh Arment, thank you so much for your time here on the Sailor Jerry podcast, my man.
Oh, you're so welcome.
Everybody, we're going to celebrate 25 years of the Aloha Monkey in Burnsville, Minnesota on April 26th to 28th. If you got a wild hair up your ass, fly out, go to the party, get tattooed. I was trying to get out there. I was trying to get out there, but you know.
At 30, you'll be playing.
At 30, we'll be playing. So it's all good. You know, Josh, it's been really cool catching up with you. And honestly, man, I got so much respect, you know, for you as an artist, as a human being, and just for continuing the tradition. I mean, you know, from Sailor Jerry to Mike, you know, to you through the shop, it's just, it's really cool to see how it all goes back, you know, from where it started and to where you're at now. So, thank you for doing what you do, man. Appreciate you.
I appreciate you. Thank you for your time and for this. Yeah, this is exceptional. So thank you for this opportunity. I appreciate you.
Oh yeah. That's a wrap on episode 67 of the Sailor Jerry podcast. As usual, huge amounts of respect and gratitude to our guest, the one and only Josh Arment. Josh, thank you so much for your time, my man. Congratulations on 25 years of the Aloha Monkey Tattoo Shop. If you're feeling freaky and you want to get out to the party, you want to get tattooed, you want to celebrate, you know, don't be a punisher first and foremost, but just give the Aloha Monkey a follow on Instagram. You can give Josh Arment a follow on Instagram. You can follow me at 213 Mattman. You can follow Sailor Jerry at Sailor Jerry. And of course, ladies and gentlemen, please never, ever, 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 ever forget that Sailor Jerry Spiced Rum is still made the old school way, 92 proof, bold, and smooth as hell. We'll see you in 2 weeks. Peace.